Welcome to the Danny Carlson Podcast, your resource for growing the business and mindset for a life of unrestricted freedom. Now here's your host, online marketing acrobat, Danny Carlson.
What's up, guys? This is Danny Carlson with the Danny Carlson Podcast, and we have here another guy in Southeast Asia. He is over one time zone, over to the left, and right now he's in his beautiful sky lounge over in the middle of Bangkok. And this is a guy who's been traveling around for quite some time. We're going to go into his story, but basically just traveling around to all the digital nomad hotspots, interviewing lots of really interesting people who have achieved success in very, very diverse domains across the online business world. And he's, you know, there's worse places to be quarantined right now. If you're watching this on video, it's a pretty epic view he's got looking over Bangkok right now. So I want to welcome to the podcast, Riley Bennett. How you doing out there, man?
What's up, Danny? Life could be worse. We're very blessed.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Bali's a pretty good place to be locked down right now as well. Luxury villas are on heavy, heavy discount, 50, 60, 70% even sometimes. So it's there's worse places to be locked down for sure. But I want to start off by just asking real quick, like, what's it like over there in Bangkok right now with this whole COVID thing going on? Like, a city, Bangkok's a really large, condensed city in Thailand, right?
Yeah, it's life is semi-normal. I go through a run through the park every day. Restaurants are all still open and takeout mode only, of course. In general, if you check the power rankings, Bangkok and Thailand in general is not anywhere near the top. So, but who knows? That could be just because there's less testing and less reporting. But it's semi-normal, just like everyone else, just working from home. And luckily, my building has this sky lounge up here, so I can work. It's like a mini co-working space. So I just spend about 4 or 5 hours up here every day and a few more hours of work in the condo. And yeah, like I said, go for a run in the sun every day. There's two different parks on either side. And street food is all still happening. You know, there's still lots of traffic on the streets, lots of people walking around. You know, that's the thing with Southeast Asia is a lot of people live day to day, so they can't afford to stop doing their street food business and stop doing their motorbike and their taxi businesses. So
yeah, they can't just go stock up on like 3 months worth of food and supplies, right? They don't have the money.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, in this part of the world, and in many countries, many people live day to day. So yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, pretty much same as a lot of places, just everyone's working from home.
Yeah, well, speaking of a lot of places, you have been to a lot of different places around Southeast Asia, around just all the digital nomad hotspots for a while, right? Like, how many years have you been traveling for, and what are, like, where all have you been? Like, what are the top places that you've really decided are the places that you want to spend your time?
Yep. Well, it has been 5.5 years this month since I've been a digital nomad in Southeast Asia. It was October of 2014 that me and my best friend Parker came out to Chiang Mai, Thailand to attend an e-commerce conference. And we got into Amazon selling around that time and started making money on Amazon. And basically, that was our dream, to be able to travel the world and be a digital nomad. And, you know, after you start making consistent money online, it's like, you know, why go back? So we just basically have been based in Southeast Asia ever since. And yeah, after Chiang Mai, you know, the next logical step after you get bored of that is Bangkok. And then the next logical step is Bali, of course. And another one is Saigon, Vietnam. So we've done between 5 years split up between those four cities, which are, the hotspots in Southeast Asia. So, but of course, long-term, you know, I like many of us have dreams of traveling the whole world, and I got my sights on South America. So when that happens, who knows, but it will happen sometime. But yeah, living the slow travel, remote work, tropical lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah, man. And I want to take it back to 2014, like when you just started off in this whole world. There's probably, and most people in your situation have some crazy stories when they're just starting out, right? Like just finding the ways to make this whole lifestyle work. It's not the traditional way to do things. You have to find an online income source. You have to get all sorts of weird little loopholes done with your visas and just sorting life out in a foreign country, right? So I'm wondering if there was a time, like right when you're starting out, where you just found yourself in a really crazy situation. You just had to get yourself out of it or figure something out.
Yeah, it was, what comes to mind is basically almost running out of money and almost having to go back home to, you know, start over, which just means go back to your job and save up money again and keep working on your side hustle, which many of my friends, and I'm sure you too, I've met out in Southeast Asia, and you know, they jump in with both feet to go full time online, and after a number of months, you know, their online business doesn't take off, and so they have to go back home and go back to their, you know, regular job. And plenty of people I've met where that's the case, and that's good because that's normal. You know, because as with any business, it's not guaranteed to catch fire the first time around. You just got to keep trying and trying. And I have many friends who they came out to this part of the world, work remote for a while, online business doesn't really take off. They go back home, save up, come back. But second time around, now it's catching on. And now they're full time still out here. So we basically almost ran out of money. Early 2015, our first Amazon private label product, we bought an order for, it was about $2,000, and it got canceled at the last minute by the supplier because their whole factory got shut down, at least this type of product, because of a patent issue. Some American company went to Alibaba and had them shut down all of these copycats being made. Ours, it was different. We were adding some specific physical features to it, but I guess they still had the patent on it. So we were like, oh crap. We ended up getting 80% of that $2,000 back from the supplier, but we had to scramble to come up with another product. This was actually January, February, 2015. And we were like, we're running out of money. We had like $1,000 to $2,000 saved up in our bank accounts each, me and Parker. And, we're like, all right, we just got to pull the trigger on something. And so we ended up pulling the trigger on this other product without even ordering samples. There's no time for that because Chinese New Year was coming up in a few weeks. And we're like, we can't afford to wait another month because we're going to run out of money.
Rent payments coming up too. Chinese New Year and rent payment coming up to stay in the country.
Yep. Yep. So we're like, oh shit, we need to flip this money that we have now in desperation to stay in Chiang Mai, which was, you know, our dream. And so luckily that test product that we didn't even order samples from, did well. And so we got lucky. It caught fire relatively quick and started making like $100 profit per day within like 30 days of it launching, because it was unique and all the things. And so, yeah, we got lucky. And then we ended up making a version 2.0 of that product, which was even better. And actually that product is still selling today, making $2,000 profit a month. Five years later.
Still, that's selling. A really good product life cycle for an Amazon product.
Yep, it's not bad. And so we're very blessed for that. That's not our main product right now, obviously, because you know everything has its kind of curve like that on the Amazon life cycle. But very blessed to have that product take off and save our butts. But so yeah, like any business, it takes a combination of good idea and execution strategy and a little bit of luck in there.
Yeah, and a little bit of a Hail Mary faith. I think any entrepreneur who's really been doing it for a number of years has been in a situation where they just had their back up against the wall, where they had to make something happen. Right, where they got themselves in a big chunk of debt, or they made a big investment that just really didn't work out, or they had like a lawsuit or something. And in my opinion, that's kind of how you earn your stripes as an entrepreneur. And if you haven't dealt with it yet, you can be sure that is coming. Like, I just actually this morning I had a conversation with a friend of mine who he has a seven-figure an app for the App Store, and his ex-wife has like taken over a bunch of the bank accounts and like changed the passwords and all the accounts and stuff, and like the sales of the company are just going way down. She's like basically trying to sabotage the whole freaking company so that she can like start a new one and take over the market. Like, just crazy stuff like that.
Wow.
Right.
So yeah, like, what do you think? Yeah. Crazy ex-wife.
Yeah. Like, what do you think about earning your stripes as an entrepreneur, so to speak? Do you think that's kind of like a rite of passage for someone who's going into entrepreneurship?
Yeah. You know, I like you get asked these questions a lot from being an influencer. Yeah, I just tell people like what I've seen out there from talking to so many, you know, solopreneurs and such. It's you gotta try multiple different things before you find that thing that takes off. And especially with Amazon, I always tell people, if everything goes according to your timeline, something's wrong. like it's normal for there to be a huge roadblock. Like, your account gets suspended or you know, flagged for being poisonous when it's nothing to do with any poisonous thing. You know, it's always these unexpected things. And if you're going to be an entrepreneur, go independent, it's like, yeah, just pencil the unexpected in there. 100%. And you know, I agree with a lot of life. A big chunk of it is random, and sometimes, you know, you get lucky and things go relatively smooth, and sometimes things and obstacles just keep hitting you and hitting you. But I guess that's what makes, what sets successful apart from the unsuccessful, is just resilience. Just keep trying, and just having that in the back of your mind that it's not a matter of if I'm going to be successful and breakthrough, of just when. So looking back, I kind of had that mindset without even knowing it. I was like, oh, if Johnny and Jabril and these guys that we see on YouTube right now, if they can be digital nomad, making full-time online, living in Southeast Asia, traveling a lot, if they can do it, then we can too. Parker, you want to do it? Okay, let's do it. So it wasn't a matter of if, it was just a matter of when. So got to have that mindset.
Yeah, the inevitability mindset, I think, is so powerful. And there's a business mentor of mine who, he's one of the guys that I respect in the game absolutely the most. His name is Perry Marshall. And he's one of these guys, he's been in digital marketing since the invention of digital marketing. So like, he, you know, Google AdWords came out and he's like, this looks interesting, let's try this thing out. And now he's got like best-selling book on Google AdWords. But he's famous for talking about the 80-20 principle. And he has a lot of data to support that today's business world is very 95-5. So 5% of the businesses are making 95% of the money. 5% of the websites get 95% of the traffic on the internet. And so if you do the numbers on that, you need to, out of every 20 things that you try, one of them, well, 18 of them are going to be total strikeouts. One of them is going to be like a single base hit. And then one out of 20 is going to be just a grand slam. So if you really do the numbers on that and you're just getting discouraged, you tried 5 things, you tried 10 things and nothing's really working, you don't really realize that that 20th thing that you try, you're going to have to go through so many different things before you find that thing that could really be a grand slam. So I think that that's a really thought-provoking thing to think about. Do you think that a lot of people might give up a little bit too early if they're just tinkering around and then maybe go back to their job?
Yeah. And I think, you know, launching a private label product on Amazon is the microcosm of all of business. You know, I yeah, for sure. You got to keep swinging the bat. And I was on a call with my two business partners yesterday, and we're like, yeah, let's just keep swinging the bat. Like, we're making a video ad for one of our Amazon products that's just geared around how you use it at home. You know, for these times right now. And so we're like, yeah, let's just swing the bat, see if it sticks. And, you know, we may need to test, you know, video advertising is a microcosm as well. You're going to need to test at least 20 ads, before you find that one that hits and catches fire.
Do you think that the 95-5 principle applies to your YouTube videos as well? Because you've grown a decently sized YouTube channel there. What about the views on the videos? Do you think that it's about 5% of the videos that are getting 95% of the views, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, it is. It is for sure. Yeah, this it's a law of nature. It's so many of these of things in nature follow this pattern. For whatever reason, that's just the way it ends up for many YouTube channels.
Yeah, man. I want to ask you a little bit about the YouTube channel as well, because you put out a lot of videos just interviewing successful people in different places around the world, talking about the digital nomad lifestyle and everything like that. I'm wondering for you, like, what is the real motivation behind that? Like, do you create a lot of good connections and you get the influence and you get all these things, but like, what was your motivation to start the channel and to really mm-hmm. put in the effort that it takes to grow to the level that you've grown now?
Yeah. Well, I guess I can start going back of how it evolved. First of all, I've always been a creative person. So even in middle school, I had my MP3 player and I would record record things at school, and I would go on to actually GarageBand, which I'm recording my audio on right now. Go on to GarageBand and splice together different pieces of audio and make these little mixtapes. Like, I would record fights, arguments, just like funny little skits. And we had this, it was like a comedy mixtape in middle school. And I used to hand out the CDs and sell them for $5. So it was me and my best friend Jeremy used to do this. So I've always been the person to document, create, record. And high school, I was big into music producing, making beats and such. So that's my background, creative background. And then, so when we came out to Chiang Mai, I was just doing daily Snapchatting, like many people do when they're on vacation. I was just doing Snapchat vlogs. Here's the food. Here's the office we're working in. Here's these other people working. So I was just documenting via Snapchat. And then I became the person that everyone follows, the guy living in Thailand. And then we visited back home for the month of July, as we do every year for 4th of July, family reunion. And I'm like, I've been documenting so many cool memories. I should just get a camera and just do this in HD. And I just kept, so I ordered this $600 camera with the most popular vlog one. Casey Neistat, Louis Cole, and all the vloggers have the Canon G7X point and shoot. Ordered that for $600. And I remember, I'm like, wow, this Amazon purchase, this just changed my life. And when we flew back out to Southeast Asia, Saigon, Vietnam was our second destination after Chiang Mai. Just started documenting, filming the life, and then doing one edit per week. And just doing a weekly vlog of digital nomad life in Saigon. And people slowly started to follow. And but the motivation was, it was just honestly for myself, like to document my fun memories, just make cool vacation videos that I can look back at in the future and be like, that was fun. It was legitimately exciting to me because this was my first time traveling abroad or living abroad. So I'm legitimately interested in culture and the street food and the digital nomad lifestyle. Like, my first year living our freaking dream. So it was literally, as Tim Ferriss says, scratching my own itch. And that's one side of it. The other side of it was, I was a huge fan of travel vloggers. Casey Neistat, probably one of the biggest. Huge Casey Neistat fan. Way before he was a daily vlogger, just the way that he films with the point and shoot and the way he edits. As a creative person, I was just like, I freaking love this method of creating. So I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to do what... I'm going to try to emulate Casey Neistat with vlogging and filming and editing and that stuff. Also was a huge fan of Jabril from Passport Heavy. His channel has now blown up now called Passport Heavy, but I was a fan of his 6-7 years ago. Long time fan of him. Also a long time fan of Louis Cole Have you heard of Louis Cole?
I haven't heard of him. I know Jabril, but haven't heard of Louis Cole before. What's he do?
Yeah, his channel is called Fun for Louis, millions of subscribers. But he did a daily travel vlog for, I think, over 900 days in a row. And wow. I used to follow him daily, his adventures, constantly traveling the world, vlogging, editing nightly by himself, which is those type of people are, I don't know how they do it. Like people like him and Casey Neistat and Drew Binsky and all these guys. So a huge fan of travel vlogs. And I'm just like, I'm traveling, I'm going to vlog. So it's just kind of naturally, you know, part of my psyche, and just started putting out, you know, my vlogs. And, you know, over time, I guess if people like you, then they subscribe and start following. And then after about a year, year and a half, people started asking me, okay, like, how are you doing this, bro? what do you do? How are you traveling constantly? You know, you get the same questions. I'm like, well, yeah, I sell on Amazon. I do this Amazon thing, private label thing. So I wrote a huge blog post on my blog, like, here's how private labeling works, yada, yada, yada. Then I made one Amazon FBA video like in 2016, and it was kind of detailing that blog post. And then people were like, can you coach me? You know, you get the same question. Can you coach me? Can I buy your course? And I'm like, I don't have a course. So me and Parker are like, all right, we need to make a course. So we do what everyone does, listens to what our audience was asking for us. And we made this whole private label course. That was in 2016. So from then on, kind of mixed in, interviews with other digital nomads, how they make money online, different business models. In general, it's like scratching my own itch as well. Cause as you know, we meet so many different interesting people living in these parts of the world. We have so much in common. It's like, everyone's ambitious, everyone's adventurous, you know, everyone has their own online business. So you just meet naturally interesting people. So I naturally want to get to know their story, you know, just like you, how their business model works. So just naturally record them, which also is worth noting, huge podcast fan as well. I'm a Joe Rogan podcast fan since way back, and I used to just be smoking weed on the couch, you know, like many of us back home, just listening to Joe Rogan every night and just being like, wow, I really love listening to interesting conversations, and I really love having interesting conversations. And of course, all podcasters can relate, but it was also one of my dreams to have my own podcast. And so no shortage of interesting folks to interview. And so I mix that in with my YouTube channel, and it's just, I just throw up on there whatever is interesting to me. And I guess that's the summary of it.
Yeah, man. One theme that I'm kind of getting here is this is a very meandering course, right? It's not like you went back in 2014 and you're like, okay, I'm doing this and I'm just going to like go hard down this path and that's it. You're just like zigging over here, and then you're zagging over here, and then like pivoting over here. Right. So I'm wondering, like, how much of where you've gone over the past 6 years has been just serendipitous and intentional? Like, how do you find that balance?
Well, the creative side has always been just what comes natural. In the creative side, I'll just say my YouTube channel is just, it's largely personal. I had no intention of, I'm going to create a channel and that's going to be a brand and a business. No, it's just like, that was my own personal like place to put my videos. And you know, YouTube is just where you put videos, you know, and you can get people that follow you. So like after people start following you, you know, after you get 1,000 subs or 100 subs, like then it becomes like a channel. It becomes like a thing now. So it's just like evolved into people following me. And then obviously when people put questions in the comments, you know, as a real dude, you're going to want to answer them, you know, honestly. And so I'm like, here's exactly what I do, you know, the private label method. So the creative stuff is all, you know, very personal, whatever interests me at that time, but the business, very intentional. It was, all right, what are other people doing that's making money, that's proven model? Obviously, the private label model. We found out about that model at the e-commerce conference that we went to. It was actually a drop shipping conference. But we met a couple kids there who were already doing private labeling, and they were crushing it. It seemed like they were crushing it more than the average drop shipper. And so we were struggling with drop shipping. So we're like, all right, let's switch to the private label model. That was very dialed in, you know, in terms of having these criteria, and followed that proven business model. So that's been very, very laid out, just following proven models as far as what works. I guess there's that balance. The creative side is very, serendipitous, but the business side has been following other people.
Yeah, like very rarely do I talk to an entrepreneur and the past 6 years of their life have been like, okay, yeah, I just decided I was doing this and then it worked out and that's what I've been doing for 6 years. It's usually big major event happens or a big failure happens and then you got to switch and pivot over to this and then some big opportunity mm-hmm. presented itself and it all came in there. But I mean, to me, that's mm-hmm. half the excitement and half the fun, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'd love to hear your opinion about so this is something that I have a love-hate relationship with. In entrepreneurship, half of the excitement comes from like all of the stuff that's super stressful and crazy, but that stuff is also stressful and crazy, right? So like, mm-hmm. what do you think about that balance between like actually having that excitement, that kind of adrenaline of it, while also not getting like super slammed and stressed out and burnt out and, you know, all of those things?
Yeah. What comes to mind is, Tim Ferriss and 4-Hour Work Week calls it eustress, you know, positive stress, you know, excitement, exciting things. Like it may be a little bit stressful. Oh my God, for example, this is a perfect situation. Oh my God, there's an outbreak. My Amazon sales are down by 50%. Oh no. It's an exciting, stressful time, but it's just like everything in life. It's mind over matter. You can either look at it as, oh, poor me. This is a horrible situation. I'm going to be in a horrible mood. Or you can look at it as, here's a huge challenge. It's going to challenge me to now come up with more products or services or digital products to create different streams of income to balance it out and say, how can we, you know, capitalize on this situation and flip it around and come out better than before. So it's with everything in life. It's how you look at it. You know, that's the story of life. It's your mindset and how you want to take it. But the entrepreneurship journey, in general, it's, you know, this is what we signed up for. We all want to be our own bosses, be independent. We all hated having a job. So, this is what we signed up for. So if you really want to be an entrepreneur, I think I agree with most of us. We're going to be excited when the roller coaster goes down. We signed up for this type of challenges. So if you want to get into entrepreneurship, start your own business, I think, most people, they're ready for that challenge. And, it's really whatever happens. It's not all that bad. This is what we love doing. So that's what we signed up for.
I'm curious to hear, what do you think people who want to be a YouTuber, people who want to grow a YouTube channel, what do you think is like the most common thing that they probably haven't thought about or they probably don't realize about being a YouTuber?
Yeah. I did a video on my channel recently called How to Break into YouTube, because literally someone asked me to make a video on that. And my big takeaway is, you know, all I can share is my experience, you know, and as I mentioned before, it was scratching my own itch. So I didn't go into it saying, I'm going to create this channel. It's going to have this content outline. It's going to be this. This is going to be the business model. It was just put out content that genuinely you're interested in. And if you're interested in it, other people will be interested in as well. So that's kind of the Tim Ferriss method. That's his whole thing as well. You know, it's very worth noting that I'm a 4-Hour Work Week total fanboy
Total Cult.
Yeah, that's what got me into this whole thing too. Reading that back like 7 or 8 years ago or something like that. That was the light bulb moment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm the same way. We had the big, we went through the 4-hour work week and put the big poster on the wall with our target monthly income and our dreamlining and all of, so I'm just the big picture. I'm just a 4-hour work week case study, if you want to put it like that. And so, I was naturally just scratching my own itch with my YouTube channel. You know, like any business, there's not one way to do a YouTube channel. There's the way that I did it. Just totally put out whatever is interesting in to you, and naturally other people will be interested in it as well. And then there's the other model of, okay, let's treat this more like a business. Let's have a schedule, a content plan, and have it more organized than a business model, you know, a way to fund it that's, you know, set up in advance. Is it going to be a Patreon funding? Is it going to be a digital product funding? Is it going to be a merch funding? I have none of that set up. It's all just unorganized and more of a personal thing. However, what I am working on now is flipping it from a personal thing into more of a business, try to have it more organized and have more of a back end, try to monetize it better, which it's not my full-time thing. So it's totally part-time. My full-time is running my Amazon FBA business. So YouTube is totally part-time. But working on turning my YouTube channel into more of a business, slowly but surely, and hopefully that will speed up here soon.
Yeah, man. And I really like your approach with just building the audience, and then you can figure out how to monetize it later. Just like get going. Mm-hmm. If you try to get everything figured out in the beginning, you probably will make some mistakes and you probably won't find the best way. So I think you actually know this guy as well. A buddy of mine here in Bali, Mike Vistil, he had a really interesting way of starting his podcast. He started it not even that long ago, maybe like 4 months ago or 5 months ago or something like that. And I remember one week he was asking, "Hey, Danny, you have a podcast, right? Like, how do you freaking do this? So, like, what kind of microphone do you want? And like, where do you host it?" And he's just asking these questions. And like a freaking week later, he's just like taking the bed out of his second bedroom and just turned it into a podcast studio. And he purchased like $5,000 worth of podcast equipment. And he just started, like, I think he had recorded 20 or 25 episodes within like 2 weeks. He just like hammered it out, and he had no idea how he was going to monetize this thing. He just freaking went for it. But within I think 3 weeks, he had made like an 80 grand promotion through one of the podcast episodes that he did there. He like that just kind of came from the action of doing the things. And granted, he already had a big following before that, but I just was really inspired by that, of him just like, I'm just going to create this audience and have faith that I will figure it out if I have the audience, right?
Yeah. Just put out real content, you know, that people will listen to, you know, entertaining, educational, or mix of the both. And yeah, if people know, like, and trust you, and if your audience is asking you for something, then yeah, just offer them that. Oh, boom, here's this product or service that you guys may be interested in. Boom. Simple as that. And I was on his podcast. I was there. I did it. I don't know if our episode ever got published or whatever, but yeah, I was there. I checked it out.
He hammered so many episodes. I think he's got like a year's worth of content in the backlog waiting to get released there. It just goes so hard.
Yeah. Super dope setup. I'm jealous of his little podcast room.
Yeah, man. Awesome, Riley. Well, this has been a really interesting episode, especially for those people who are interested to try out the digital nomad lifestyle and do all those sorts of things. If people wanted to learn more about what you do or check you out on YouTube, where's the best place for them to reach out or talk a little bit about your YouTube channel?
My YouTube channel is it's called Living That Life. So you can search Living That Life on YouTube. LivingThatLife.com is my blog. And you can find me on Instagram, Living That Life TV. And pretty much doing daily Instagram, behind the scenes lifestyle stuff, posting a lot on Instagram as well. So yeah, that's where I'm hanging out.
Heck yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for your time, Riley. And hope you stay safe over there in Bangkok, up there in that beautiful Sky Lounge. And stay fit, stay healthy, and all those sorts of things. And if you had one final piece of advice for someone who has been following this type of media. They've been following the digital nomad lifestyle. They've been looking at YouTube videos, and they just haven't found the reason to pull the trigger. What would you say to that mm-hmm. person?
Yeah, I would say a good thing, glad you asked that, is what works for me was buying a ticket 6 months in advance to a conference in Southeast Asia. So I bought a ticket to a conference in Southeast Asia, early 2014, that put that on the calendar that I'm going to blast off at that time. So I would recommend there's the Nomad Summit every January. It's in Chiang Mai, Thailand. There's also one in Bali there in June. This one obviously got turned to virtual because of this time, but next June, I would bet that it's going to be another one in Bali.
Yeah, so, I'm speaking of that one actually. It's I think you're, yeah. Are you speaking to that one as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I was as well, or I am as well.
Virtually.
So look, physically yeah, now. Virtually. Yeah, so look at the calendar, guys, see when the next conference is and buy that ticket, put your money where your mouth is. And that creates the excuse to come out to Southeast Asia and meet 100 other like-minded people instantly. There's no quicker way to do it. At least get tons of Facebook friends of people that are doing the same thing. And you can either stay indefinitely to do your independent thing full time, or you can just, you know, if you can't leave your job yet, come for a week, come for 2 weeks. I know many people that come out for a little sabbatical, just take a few months, or jump in with both feet indefinitely. So even if it's just a week or 2 weeks, come out to the conference. Meet a bunch of like-minded people and get a bunch of ideas at the same time, and check out Southeast Asia. Like at the very least, it's a freaking vacation, but you mix in business with it. So why not?
Yeah, I think that just makes it so much more real, actually surrounding yourself with people who are doing it, people who have figured things out, people who have been along that path. Because when you're not surrounded by people like that, it's kind of like the 4 minute mile. You don't know what you don't know when you're surrounded by a whole bunch of people who are not actually living that life. So definitely check out Riley's channel, Living That Life, on Instagram and YouTube and all that stuff. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Podcast too.
You can
subscribe to my podcast too. I forgot about that.
Boom, all the things. And guys, we'll have the show notes on dannycarlson.co/podcast. And if you haven't already, go leave a review on iTunes, on Stitcher, anywhere you guys can leave a review. I made it real easy for you guys. You guys can do that at ratethispodcast.com/DC. And it's going to open whatever app you have on your phone, and instantly you can leave a review just like that. So I read every single one of those. Really appreciate it. And until next time, guys, kick some ass.
Thanks for joining us on the Danny Carlson Podcast. For resources mentioned in this episode, visit dannycarlson.co.